Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Former Ukrainian President Zelensky is in the U.S. peddling what he calls a victory plan. Unfortunately, this plan doesn't speak to peace and security. In fact, Zelensky and his NATO patrons have only one goal: to keep the conflict going and well-funded. This approach is a defeat for Ukraine. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest Stephen Gajic in Belgrade. He is a research associate at Belgrade's Institute of European Studies. In Basel, we have Andrei Telushenko. He is a former Ukrainian diplomat. And in Sweden, we cross to Greg Simmons. He is an independent researcher. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Stephen, let me go to you first in Belgrade. This victory plan has been bandied about. I'm not sure how much different it is from the Zelensky peace plan. We can go there if you want, but what is he trying to achieve? Because at this point, it just seems like a public relations pitch in the dying days of the Biden administration. Your thoughts, Stephen?
It is great that you just mentioned Zelensky's peace plan, which was charaded on June 15th, 16th, near Basel in Switzerland, when basically what we had was a conference of the donors, which are contributing to peace by giving more and more money and weapons. Essentially, what Donald Trump just said yesterday in one of his pre-electoral speeches is that Zelensky is the greatest salesman. Whenever he comes to the United States, he goes back with $60 billion. This conference is even, I think, more malicious because he talks about the victory plan at the moment when Ukrainian defense is crumbling in Donbas. And what this means is escalation of war. He demands for NATO to basically directly get involved. What is more important here is not what Zelensky thinks, but what the NATO elite and the outgoing administration think. Because what they want is, even in the event of Trump winning the election, they want him to become a hostage of war. And at the same time, this goes along with the dramatic escalation of war in the Middle East. Israel, after destroying basically Gaza and killing tens of thousands of people, now is began the same action in Lebanon. And what they want is to drag the United States. At the same time, we see Harry Truman ship, aircraft carrier, moving slowly towards the Middle East. This is very dangerous, and I think this is the most dangerous moment so far. It's between now and between the American elections.
Yeah, Stephen, it could be what is popularly known as the October surprise. But there's so many issues out there that could be the October surprise, unfortunately. Andrei, let me go to you in Basel. One of the things, I can understand Ukraine has security interests. I've never begrudged that, okay? But I can't see how this regime that is illegitimate at this point here. Zelensky is the former president, after all, under its own constitution. But Zelensky doesn't talk about security. He doesn't talk about peace. But he wants the conflict to continue. But the longer it continues, the more he loses his men and the smaller Ukraine becomes. Like, explain the logic behind this for me.
There's no logic, but there is logic at the same time. He wants to stay in power. That is it. That is a so-called peace plan, victory plan, you can call it whatever, but it's a plan for war and destruction of Ukraine. That is it. Zelensky could have stopped this war in 2019. He could have stopped it when he became the president, with the Minsk Accords getting an autonomy for the Donbas area and having Ukraine united. He didn't do that. He continued to fetch this warmongering process into leading into full-scale war between basically on Ukraine territory between the United States and Russia, using Ukrainian men to die. More than 970,000 troops are dead from the Ukrainian side, are dead in the ground today. That is what Zelensky's so-called peace plan is to stay in power, lose as much as possible of men. He doesn't care about Ukrainian men and women. He doesn't care about what's happening in Ukraine. He's destroying the church. He's going after the Orthodox in Ukraine, millions of Orthodox in Ukraine, where basically is the birthplace of Orthodoxy in the Slavic world. So this is what we see today, a full destruction, a plan to destroy more Ukraine, to feed it to BlackRock, to the deep state, to keep himself in power. And that is it. There's no peace in it at all. He could have done it in Istanbul in 2022, ended this whole bloodshed. He didn't do that because he got orders directly from Washington and London to keep this war going, because to make more money, to make more money for the military-industrial complex in Washington and the deep state. That is it. This is from the Ukrainian standpoint of view. I talked to a lot of diplomats and former diplomats who around the globe today. More than 60% of Ukrainian diplomatic corps didn't come back. That is a fact. And they all are supporting what I'm saying today, these words. Zelensky is, as you said, an illegitimate president. There's no legitimate parliament in Ukraine. And his peace, so-called plan, is a bloodshed for Ukraine. He's destroying our country. He has to leave.
Yeah, well,
eventually
he'll probably end up in one of his villas in Miami or one another palatial destination.
That's
here.
What he thinks.
Well, I mean, if he gets out of the country, because a lot of people want to see him in a ditch as well. That's what happens when you choose a patron like NATO. Greg, we had the British Prime Minister at the behest of Tony Blinken, apparently, go to Washington, and there was going to big fanfare that, you know, the Ukrainians can use Western weapons to shoot deep into Russia. It didn't happen. There wasn't a press conference. There really wasn't much of a readout. And of course, the political sphere is abuzz. What happened here? Did the Pentagon finally say, no, you people are really, really nuts, particularly since we're on the hook to go to war in the Middle East again? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out the truth here. But we did. We were staring into the abyss. Because for a change, they listened to what President Vladimir Putin said. You do that, then we're in a state of war with NATO. Go ahead, Greg in Sweden.
Oh, absolutely, as you say. I mean, they had prepared the whole groundwork for this bizarre kind of PR stunt where they were going to allow a free hand, which they needed to actually activate in order to target Russia and then expect no consequences of it. But then, of course, Putin said something and they were forced to listen. And I think it created a deadlock in those behind closed doors, where you had those who are still saying, oh, let's jump over this cliff. It's going to be fantastic. This kind of Dr. Strangelove moments and hug the bomb and this kind of path. But then you had those other ones who deadlocked it and said, well, no, let's do some actual common sense here. And so this prevailed because, I mean, as you say, everything indicated that they were going to go ahead. And they were going to hug the bomb and whatever happened.
Greg, that brings up the issue here. And this is, let me go back to Stephen in Belgrade. I mean, the mantra coming out of NATO capitals is that the Russians will, they claim red lines, but they never hold to them. Well, number one, I would claim when we talk about red lines, most of those fictional red lines come from the West. It's not what Russian officials actually say themselves. But in this case here, they're saying that the Russians won't escalate. Well, I always remind people that Russia threatened to invade Ukraine in 2022. And you know what, Stephen? They did. Okay, so I don't understand why people say they're always bluffing. Russians don't bluff. They act. Stephen.
I think that this logic of NATO is nothing else but infernal logic, because what they are doing is they're literally pushing the world towards a complete annihilation. And they're doing that with the smile on their face, with a smirk, which is kind of amazing. I think that Russia is definitely not bluffing, but Russia still cannot comprehend the amount of evil that these people are capable of doing. Who would have thought that Ukraine, quote unquote, with all the American equipment, would invade Kursk, and that we would see again German tanks burning on those same fields where they burned some 70 plus years ago. So these people are ready to do everything and anything in order to stay in power. As we see what's happening in the Middle East, Netanyahu knows if he doesn't escalate, he will probably go to jail. He will have to face charges in Israel because people are sick of war. Most of people in every society are normal. They want their kids to go to school. They want to have certainty in their lives, and they certainly don't want to die in thermonuclear war. And the problem is that we have a small clique of a world, I wouldn't say even leaders, but people in power, in different sectors of power, who are interested in total escalation. I don't know, what do they think? Did they watch James Bond movies and they have a little ship under the sea or somewhere? So they think they will fly to space or save themselves biologically somehow, or whatever they think. It is a delusion, because what they are essentially doing, they are trying to provoke a huge war. And I think that this is a critical time. As I said earlier, between today and the American election. So that is what we are looking at.
But Andre, what does Ukraine get by doubling down? Because the Zelensky, quote unquote, peace plan basically asked Russia to surrender. It's the same thing here. Why does this? I mean, is this a fiction for Western elites and financiers? I mean, certainly people in Ukraine can't believe it. Go ahead.
People in Ukraine don't believe this. A lot of people in Ukraine hate today's government, hate the Nazi regime that is under Zelensky. They want this war to end. They want to get back to their lives. There's no economy. There's nothing for them under this regime. So they're looking forward to a chance out. But Zelensky is running in la-la land. He's being pushed this fiction idea that he can win, that he is the leader of the world. He's being given all these so-called awards in Washington, but he's not. He's just a puppet in the hands of the puppeteers around the globe, basically in London and Washington. That is it. He likes it. He loves it. He sold out.
I mean, he said it in an interview once, it was the greatest role of his life. He kind of let the mask slip because he does enjoy being this. But I don't know if he's going to be able to get out of this alive here. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
The Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go to Greg. I mean, it's really interesting. Boris Johnson came out with an article on The Spectator titled, It's Time to Let Ukraine Join NATO. And then in the first paragraph or so, we need to get Ukraine into NATO now, and I mean now, okay? I mean, this is the biggest buffoon on the international stage, and I'll tell you, it's a very competitive stage these days. What is motivating him? We even had the outgoing head, Stoltenberg of NATO, even admit that this conflict came about because of NATO expansion. He admitted it. It's all public, part of the public record. And the Russians have made it clear that this is, they said it in Istanbul before and Istanbul, and they keep saying today that is a prerequisite to wrap this thing up here. But Boris Johnson continues to do it. I mean, is he an ideological nutcase, or is he just making a lot of money off of this? Go ahead.
I think it's not either or. It's a case of both. the guy is definitely, shall we say, cognitively challenged, and so therefore his career options post prime minister are rather slim. And in this particular respect, what he is trying to do is prostrate himself to those decision makers in Washington, D.C., to curry enough favor for the career of Boris Johnson to continue being a buffoon on the global stage. I mean, this is purely about him, but he's prepared to prostitute himself to whatever cause in order to do that.
You know, Stephen, the problem that we face right now is that I believe, and you know, that the real history of this will be written one day, is that Blinken, Nuland, Sullivan, they thought the threats of a conflict, they thought the sanctions would work, they thought international isolation would work. They never really thought that a conflict would happen, and they were caught flat-footed, and that's the reason why they've never had a plan B. Stephen.
I hope so. That comes with the presumption that they are rational, real politics politicians who just want a victory, but not to destroy their own countries in the process. So what I see more, you've just mentioned Boris Johnson and Zelensky is similar. Those are I would call them evil clowns. They're like the Joker. Sometimes I think that Hollywood was always preparing us for the events to come. Remember all the catastrophic movies with Washington and New York being destroyed, all of them being filmed before 9/11. So now when I look back at 2019 and the movie Joker, I think of Johnson, I think of Zelensky, I think of people who did not get enough credit because they were bullied or God knows what kind of frustration they had. And now they are destroying the planet with a smile on their face. And this is what I'm really afraid of. It's not rationality. It's not even Dr. Strangelove kind of logic. It is the logic of pure evil, because that is what I see. I always am trying to find some kind of a rational thinking. Why are they saying so? But this is more than a bluff, because as you just mentioned previously, they know for a fact that Russia is not bluffing at the end of the day. So why are they provoking? Why are they provoking Russia to respond to rockets that will explode inside of Russia? It is what Johnson is advocating for. It is what Zelensky is advocating for. But as I said, Zelensky is not that important. What is important is this dark elite behind him, behind Johnson, behind these people who are, I don't know what are they trying to do, but this is going beyond real politics. This is going beyond geopolitics.
Yeah, and because it's, at the end of the day, it's everyone's security is threatened, everyone, by doing this here. You know, Andrei, one of the things that I've thought about during this, and I've been watching this situation since 2014, that's the beginning of this conflict here that most Western audiences are never exposed to. But, you know, I've always been, you know, bewildered how you would get this elite in Kyiv supported by the West, willingly, you know, people say Ukraine is a victim. And I always say, well, no, it's a volunteer. They volunteered for this mission. This is it's inexplicable to me. And considering the results to date, I mean, it's so bewildering. But to add to it, Andre, you have Europe going along with it, too. Look at all of the elections across the board. I mean, Scholz was, you know, he's happy that his party got half a point higher than is the alternative for Germany. I mean, think about that. 2 or 3 years ago, would you think that would be an election outcome in Germany? All through Europe. I mean, what is going on here? Very much like what Stephen was saying here. I just don't understand why people signed up to this, because it's always to their detriment. What has Ukraine gotten out of this? What has Europe gotten out of this? We know a lot of arms makers made a lot of money from this. Okay, fine. But everybody else? Andre.
The elites. What the elites got out of this. The elites got out of this. Their bank accounts filled more. They have a possibility to go to the United States and to look up to their owners and masters in Washington. That's where they get paid for. They get a gold parachute after all this. They end this. Ursula von der Leyen, she gets a gold parachute. She comes out and sits on a board of directors of a huge company or a board of directors of a think tank. She gets paid a lot of money. The same thing with the so-called Ukrainian elites. I was there. I backed out of this in 2016 and left the government position saying, no, I will not be part of the scam to get my country into a bloodshed. And I saw how Poroshenko, I was in his office, I was seeing all these prosecutors, all these government officials begging to sell to the Americans, asking where is the door to the U.S. embassy and to sell off. That's what it was. They were selling it off directly. Ukraine was, the elites of Ukraine were selling their country off directly to the West. And they were looking for that door through every channel they could. That is the biggest problem. The same thing in Europe. They don't think about their people. They think about themselves. That is the biggest situation here. And the same thing with the so-called elites in Washington. They're evil. And they had a plan to do this. They had a plan to destroy Russia from within. Brzezinski's plan, what he gave to Reagan in 1985,
right,
to dismantle Russia, pull it apart, take it apart, and use all the resources in Russia. That's what the plan was. And they thought it was going to happen in the first 3 months of this proxy war they used Ukraine then. But it didn't happen. Russia stayed in place. The government of Russia is stronger than ever. The whole world is backing up Russia, Africa, Latin America, Asia. It's all behind. BRICS is growing. And this is the result they didn't expect. And that's going to be their karma. They lost. But the people are suffering. That is the biggest situation. The people in Europe are suffering. The prices are skyrocketing. Volkswagen is leaving Germany. Mercedes is leaving Germany. Ukraine is totally destroyed. And it's going to be costing over $500 billion to rebuild it. The West is not going to rebuild it. I think that's the biggest question. Will the West rebuild it?
Well,
no.
I mean,
the resources and leave Ukraine.
We may find out. I mean, I suppose by the time this program airs, we may know more details. But, I mean, they're bandying about another trillion dollars, and we'll take it in small bills. Thank you very much. I mean, this is extraordinary here. You know, Greg, before all of this happened in 2014 to the present, I used to go to Ukraine a lot, and I really love Ukraine, and I really enjoyed visiting Kyiv and meeting with Ukrainian people. And I actually care a lot about the country to this day. And the only way that Ukraine is going to survive, Europe is going to survive, and the world is going to survive, if we go back to the Helsinki idea of security, indivisibility of security. That's the only way out. Okay? And that ensures that Ukraine, at least in some form, will survive. The path that the Zelensky crowd is going down assures that Ukraine may face destruction, complete destruction. Go ahead, Greg, in Sweden.
Okay, yeah, but you're talking common sense. This is the problem. I mean, most of these people live in these echo chambers and have these filter bubbles and just live in an alternate existence. I mean, the moment that Zelensky agreed to go to war, I mean, Ukraine's independence was utterly lost. And I mean, so when he was to go ahead with the attack on Donbass, which is why the OSCE observers left, Ukraine's independence was over. And I mean, but I think the issue now is that they live in these existences. I was in Poland recently, and you had all these people talking about like they were in the Yalta conference in 1945, and that, you know, Russia was on its knees and they were going to divide up Russia afterwards. They do not live in reality. And I mean, I think one of the things which is going to tell is Zelensky has done the, I suppose, the grave crime that any puppet can do, that he believes that he is a subject and not an object of these games. And I mean, his big demanding is getting a little bit too high for comfort for some of these people. So, I mean, the moment will be when Ukraine and Zelensky and the rest are dropped. Because this is what the U.S. does, whether it be Afghanistan.
Yeah, this is what I told, when this was all beginning, I told, I had a good friend of mine, she has family in Ukraine, to say, but you know, they're not fearful because America's on our side. And I said, they will dump you when it's appropriate, when you're no longer necessary, and it's happening right now. Stephen, I think, one of the last minute here goes to Stephen. I think the Biden administration wants to give a gift to a potential Trump administration, and that is this failed Ukraine project. They just want to drop it in their lap, and they'll say, see, Trump lost Ukraine. Go ahead, Stephen.
Exactly. Maybe that was the reason why Biden was wearing a Trump hat. But on a more serious note, my question is, what comes next? Because I think that Zelensky is already a person of the past. He just got his award, and the Donbass front is crumbling. What I'm thinking of is a statement of Annalena Baerbock, who said that Moldova is next. So what is that supposed to mean? And it's very indicative that also President of Belarus, Lukashenko, said that the attack on Belarus would mark the beginning of World War III. So maybe these people are already, I'm talking about, of course, NATO, people are already thinking about what comes next, what after.
Well, Stephen, I'm sure all of you and our viewers saw that last interview with Victoria Nuland and that smirk on her face. They got plans. They still got big plans. We're going to have to leave it there, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Belgrade, Basel, and in Sweden. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.